11. It's the 7th edition of HWR's Dark Match. Mm-hmm. I'm Abel.
I'm drinking water.
Chris?
I'm Chris.
Is that your Native American name? Drinking water?
Yeah, drinking water.
Yeah. That's Chris. We just finished watching Ultima Lucha Tres.
All of it.
Four full fucking episodes. And we're going to go ahead and go through all of them. If you happen to be watching us live, thank you so much. I know this is kind of off time here, but that's awesome if you're watching us live. You can interact with us, ask us questions, call us out on our bullshit, fact check us, whatever. This is all about Ultima Lucha. So I know TOC is later tonight. Hopefully we'll be done before TOC. So you can do, your pre-show, whatever you want to do, go watch TOC. But right now we're talking all about Ultima Lucha. If you're not watching us live, that's okay. You can still interact with us on Facebook, facebook.com/HoustonWrestlingRadio, or on Twitter at @HWrestlingRadio, or just drop a comment right here on the old YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe as well. We'd very much appreciate more subscribers.
Is that what that is?
Subscribers.
Con huevos, man. So how do you want to play this? Do you want me to go from the bottom up, or do you want to just start picking bright?
We need to go from the bottom up.
Okay.
I'll tell you why once we get to it.
Okay.
All right. So from bottom up.
So we had 4 episodes. This is episode 1. Tejano against Famous V and Dr. Wagner.
That started off the night on a very positive note, unexpectedly, because I haven't given a single fuck about Tejano ever since he was been in Lucha Underground. Mm-hmm. I've never liked the guy. This stuff with Famous B, I've liked Famous B, but I was like, I don't care. They're really trying to shine a turd here. Famous B's got all the charisma in the world. Tejano ain't got none. And I didn't care. But what I really, really liked about this match, beautiful Brenda, man. Beautiful Brenda. All this shit she was saying after she kissed Tejano. I was like, oh, it tastes like barbecue sauce. Like,
Ay, papa. Man.
It's
funny because the build was funny. Like, Dario made the match Tejano versus Famous B. And Famous B was like, dude, I got a broken arm. I was like, well, I guess it's really a handicap match, huh? Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is going to take all of 5 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So when they changed it up to having it to be a competent wrestling match, I was pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm. I like the outcome. Like, I wanted it. Like, Tejano, the same complaint as you. He's decent in the ring. You know, he's got heritage, he's got clout, but he doesn't really have much of a personality that you can't find in like half of the other wrestlers in the indie scene.
Yeah.
You know, so for him to be with Famous B, I want to see it. So I'm glad it came out that way because that's the outcome that I was hoping for.
Yeah, and I think that was the best that could have happened with that match. It was a nice little opener. The comedy of Brenda did it for me. That got me pumped. That got me going. That got me back into the lucha flow of things. I gave it a solid thumbs up. I don't know. Do we want to do 1 out of 10 stuff for this or just go?
Nah.
All right, let's just go. So that was that. It was good enough for me to start it off.
That was a good appetizer.
Yes.
Because the main course, man, you had to like your meat raw.
Ooh.
Hella War. Explain to the humanoids Hella War.
All right. Well, basically it's Hell in a Cell. It's 2 out of 3 falls. Or not Hell in a Cell. What would they call it? 3 stages of Hell. Yeah. 2 out of 3 falls. Each fall is a different match type. All right. The first one was, what did they say?
Primera Sangre.
Primera Sangre. First blood match. All right, first blood. Second fall would be just straight up no DQ. And then the third fall is, it wasn't an ambulance. What did they call it?
Medical evac.
Medical evac. All right. Ambulance match. Come on. It was an ambulance match. But I appreciate Lucha Underground putting their own spin and their own name on things and like changing stuff up. It wasn't just a fucking ambulance, you know. It was like, oh, well, these are the military guys and it's the Hell of War match, and you know, the soldiers came out there, showed up with the gurney and stuff and like saluted and everything. Okay, I get it. I get that they follow along the theme, so I like that. But yeah, that's basically the two out of three falls, and that's what the match was supposed to be. So I've liked the feud. Mm-hmm. All right. The was it Ultimate Warfare match? What was it? What did they call it?
Modern Warfare.
Modern Warfare match.
Yeah.
You know, that was really good. I've thoroughly enjoyed this feud, and I knew I was going to enjoy this match. And especially since, you know, this was 4 weeks ago that it aired, and I had already heard from you, from Facebook, people saying, holy shit, that match, you know? And I, coming out of it, I'm like, holy shit, that match.
Because you know what happens between us. Somebody mm-hmm. overhypes it. You're over here looking like,
man, you're
scrutinizing
yeah. that shit. So, I don't want to say that's what's happened to me here, that I'm like, oh my God, I'm scrutinizing the shit out of it or whatever. Cause I know you were talking match of the year, and there was other people who were saying, oh man, that match was better than anything else I've seen all year or whatever, and all this and that. Mm-hmm. So expectations were high going into it, but I have a lot of mixed feelings about this match.
Go.
Well, there's two big flaws I see in the match, and one's not quite as big as the other, but it's still pretty big. Me, you, and Porsche were all sitting on the couch watching, and Porsche was the first one to pick it up, but I started picking it up even more. And usually, I'm the guy that's like, hey, just give me a brief explanation to make it make sense. And what I'm referring to here is the refs helping out with setting up the spots, pushing the gurney, putting the glass on the chair, da 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 da, this and that. The ref helped fucking everything there. And at the very, very beginning, it was like, was it Fox? Was mm-hmm. it Dante Fox that said, hey, help me or else I'll punch you in the face? Okay, that kind of made sense for that first one, but other times, like, the ref was just helping without being threatened, when it was helping fucking Killshot, not Dante. When he was just helping just to be helpful in the destruction, and it didn't make sense in a kayfabe of a referee's mind traditionally in wrestling. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't like that about the match, and the fact that, like, it kept happening. It wasn't one time, and the one time was explained. It kept happening over and over and over and over. And that one explanation, that first time, I didn't feel fit all the rest. You know, so I didn't like that. So that's kind of like a big flaw of the match. But the other thing, that this is the thing that I'm like really grappling with here, the thing that I'm struggling with, is just this sheer brutality of the match itself. I know that there's a market for it. I know that back in the Attitude Era, when shit would happen that's fucking crazy, oh, flaming tables and all this and that, like, that was really cool back then. But even then, it was downplayed, unless you watch some of the really super hardcore shit in Japan, or some really super hardcore shit that Terry Funk did, even in the States.
Combat Zone Wrestling.
Or now, modern days, Combat Zone Wrestling. And I've never been a fan of that kind of stuff. Once you saw it kind of creeping into the mainstream of Wrestling Society X, where, oh, there's a tank full of piranhas, and there's like a pallet full of light tubes, and you got to crash through the light tube. And then I'm like, all right, dude, this is too much. And you're not at WrestleMania making millions and millions of dollars, where I could see, as, you know, putting myself in the eyes of the performer, like, okay, yeah, all
I'm
right.
I'm doing this for 80,000 people live. I'm doing it for 5 million people at home. I'm not yeah. doing it for, like, a soccer team.
As much as I like Lucha Underground, as much as I hope Lucha Underground wants to be that company that's that big and that well-received, you're not right now. You know? How many people you got in the temple? 500, maybe?
I would even go less than that.
Yeah. You don't have thousands of people in the temple, mm-hmm. and you don't have that many people watching, and you're doing stuff that's going to affect your career for the long haul. Dante Fox, and hell, even Killshot, they both could be later on signed to WWE and be pretty boys. But that motherfucker ain't going to be no pretty boy now with all the scars he's going to have all up and down his back. Dude, that's ruining a aspect of his fucking career. So it kind of makes me question, dude, was it really worth it to do that? Like, when I was watching the match, I was like, oh, shit. Holy fuck. I can't believe it. Oh, my God. It got me in the moment to pop at the surprise. But then was like, ooh, that's probably not sugar glass. Oh, God damn. He's really fucking bleeding. Oh, God damn. They're both really fucking bleeding. Holy shit. And I was like,
did the piece of skin on the gurney kind of sealed it for you?
It sealed it. I was already having that feeling before then. But it really makes me think, like, why should I care so much if they think it's okay? I mean, it's their career to cut short or not cut short, to grab the glory while they can. So it's not really my choice to make. And if they choose to do it, then maybe I should just sit back and enjoy the fucking brutality and the show of it all. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's where I'm caught between a rock and a hard place, because I love, absolutely fucking love Edge versus Foley, WrestleMania, 22. Flaming tables, yeah. Barbed wire baseball bat, Foley with the barbed wire around his belly when Edge did the spear. Like, oh man, that shit was hardcore, and I fucking love that match. When we did our brackets to determine the best WrestleMania match of all time, I remember I kept voting for that match to go through further and further in the rounds, and I think it made it to at least the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. And that match, fuck yeah, I loved it. You know, I love, fucking love Mick Foley. And I know all the stupid shit he did. You know, so am I a bit of a hypocrite if I criticize these guys for doing it too? I don't know. And that's where I'm struggling here. Because aside from the gruesome spots, the wrestling in between was fucking phenomenal. The wrestling in between, the moves that they were pulling off, the athleticism, the jumping from one corner to the other corner to do a shooting star press off of the top onto the floor. Holy fuck, man. That was amazing. Both of them being up on the top corner, AR Fox being on the apron, jumping up to the top rope, and then boom, Spanish fly off of the top. Holy shit, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was such a great fucking match that I want to elevate it to match of the year candidacy levels. But my struggle for the gruesomeness of it makes me want to not put it on.
Let me help you out here.
So you tell me.
Let me help you out here.
Hey, Ryan, what's up? Thank you for being in the live chat.
I would have that kind of feeling towards the Edge Foley match as opposed to this match. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because you mentioned it earlier. They have this history. The story's basically like two seasons old. Remember, we're carrying two seasons worth of storyline here.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, the story's been developed. It's had a beginning. You've seen it evolve into where it got to Modern Warfare, and it evolved to where the fans started cheering Dante and kind of not Killshot so much, mm-hmm. and that it wasn't finished. If you look at the microcosm of this episode, or if you were to look at it as a whole, like we did today. Out of all the matches that they had, we even mentioned this in one of the main event matches in the last show. It was like, for a match with this kind of rivalry, you would expect blood. Somebody had that right. comment while we were watching that.
Yeah.
And I was expecting – I was not expecting the level that we got, but I wasn't surprised that it went there, because that's how good the story has been told between these two guys, that if it went that far, I don't have to suspend my disbelief. Like I've read the story enough that that's a plausible ending for me. You know, at least with Edge and Mick Foley, dude, Edge had lost the heavyweight title like in March. What the fuck was he doing wrestling Mick Foley in April at WrestleMania? And then after that, like nothing. Like there was really no reason for that to go that far. Mick Foley, Randy Orton, that was the whole Evolution rivalry against Mankind and against Mick. So that evolved in months before the Backlash match where Randy Orton got backdropped into thumbtacks and went through the hardcore stuff. So that for me
felt like – you could say some of the shit that Orton and Cena did.
That too. There's a long story for that, to where you've built up and up and up and up to where you get to the final chapter of that story that it merits what you see. And I didn't have I was just like, yeah, there were parts where I was like, oh my God, this is fucking gross. But I understood why. Mm-hmm. I wasn't gripping with that in the moment that you were, as far as like, oh man, did it really need to go that far? Because I don't think any other match than the pay-per-view went that far.
Well, I get what you're saying, that it had to go that far and that it fits going that far within the confines of the storyline. Mm-hmm. I get it, because Lucha Underground is more movie than it is fucking wrestling. I get it. But when it comes to the in-ring stuff, it's more wrestling than it is movie in terms of production, in terms of how you get it to do the thing. Like Terminator. I fucking love the Terminator movies. Guys getting blown in half and big holes, and then it, you know, regenerates just like nothing. And, oh, the dude died by going down into the fucking lava with the thumbs up. Like, yeah, that shit's cool and super violence. Yay, violence. Yeah. But none of that shit was real. That was all, you know, fucking CGI and the magic of Hollywood and them using fucking prosthetics and shit like that. This wasn't prosthetics. For Dante Fox to tell the story that the kayfabe called for, that the script called for, he did it to himself in real life. That's like if the actor for The Shining actually killed the people with the hatchet. You know, if they were in a Jason movie and the fucking teenager was actually having sex and actually ran away and actually fell down and actually got stabbed to death.
Well, yeah. That also goes back to a lot of actors that are now wanting to do their own stunts so that it looks authentic.
Yeah, but still, you know? Stunts, that's Hollywood stunts. You're doing it with a fucking wire that has a harness and a pulley, and you do, okay, it's a stunt. But this wasn't a stunt. He actually went through glass, really cut up his back, was really bleeding profusely at the end of the ding, first fall. Had to go through the rest of the match, two other falls, Killshot got his color in the second fall, and then the third fall, it was like...
No, Killshot got his color in the first fall, Dante got his color in the second fall, and then we end it by Dante tasting glass like Killshot did. Oh my god, oh fuck.
That's why I gotta say, the dudes playing the character, even though it makes sense in the confines of the storylines for the character, yeah. It's like, dude, you're really doing that to yourself. Like, man, I don't know, dude. Like, that's why I'm struggling. And I wish you were convincing me more, because if I could forget about that fact, the wrestling was great. The story was great. The athleticism was great. The atmosphere was great. The commentary was great. Everything was great. And I want to fucking put it there on a match of the year list.
That's the one part that like you said, that the clincher for you was the meat on the freaking gurney. The clincher for me was hearing Vampiro getting off on commentary, watching all the destruction in the beginning.
Right.
And then towards the end, Vampiro is like, you know what? Both of these guys are winners. Can we just stop the fucking match already? For a guy that's that masochistic, actually have sympathy for these two guys, that's what sealed it for me.
That was very good commentary.
Oh my god, that brought the whole thing home for me. Mm-hmm. Like if we were doing match of the week, that would in the moment when we were doing the episodes, if this was 3 weeks ago, this was definitely my match of the week, hands down. Okay. Like I even now watching it, I was doing to myself what we each do to each other. It's like I was paying attention. And for me, the flaw with the referee is like, well, I don't want to have to fucking tell the referee every time, hey, you better help me or I'm going to beat your ass. I don't want to repeat myself. I'm going to tell you once, help me or I'm going to beat the shit out of you. So that's what happened. So okay. For me, that was enough for me. I didn't really notice that part. I didn't really notice that much until the second time, because there's no different whether it's a ref or there's eight different fucking people in a ladder match. There's always somebody there doing something to make sure
somebody's willing their record.
Somebody's helping, holding stuff, or you know. So that part it didn't stick to me that long. But as far as night one goes, that night one was the only one that I saw the next day from start to finish.
Okay.
Everything else I either saw in spots or I didn't see at all or didn't read about. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it was fresh to me. And walking out of that first episode, they raised that bar fucking high.
Yeah.
Really
like,
high.
Man, I hate to sound like those guys back during the Attitude Era and right before the Attitude Era that used to say, well, that's not wrestling. And then, you know, 20 years later, I'm the guy saying, dude, you shouldn't be doing that in wrestling. Yeah. That's not wrestling. Because then I feel hypocritical, because it's like, hey, wrestling evolves and evolves and evolves. But man, I kind of want to say it. Like, CZW, like, the stupid shit that, like, you see from them where they're, like, they have their mouth open, they put a fucking metal skewer through their cheek.
Staple dollar bills to their side. Boobs.
Like, dude, that's not wrestling, man.
The stuff from the 6 minutes of the movie The Wrestler that has Mickey Rourke against Necro Butcher, even I would tell you, I don't consider that shit pro wrestling. I don't.
But going through a plate of glass? And then getting slammed on glass? And all the other crazy shit that happened in the match? Where is that line drawn? And I'm not sure with this match. I'm not sure where that line... I feel like weird. I need help.
I don't want to be a hypocrite either, but I think it's about... damn, what's the word I'm looking for? It's about... knowing the story, I guess. Like if we already have not just preconceived notions. I've seen a lot of Necro Butcher stuff. I've seen a lot of CZW stuff. All that's the same shit.
Yeah.
The light tubes and the staples and the freaking like the drill bits and all this weird and it's getting tasered and all that crazy shit. That's their style of wrestling.
Yeah.
So it's easy for me to label the stuff from like Necro Butcher stuff and light tubes and stuff as hardcore. This, it felt like they did, like the first thing that they did wasn't go grab the fucking glass. Like they wrestled, they had a match. They fought. They started from here and it escalated to where it got. As opposed to like
they had the chairs out there, they had all their weapons. After this, they already had the Modern Warfare match, which was brutal as fuck to start with.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, again, I agree with you that it makes sense within the story, and the story is
context
great.
Is what I was looking for.
In the context of the story, it's great. You know, so I would give it all tens across the board for all that.
The humanity
of it. Like, the humanity of not the character, but the humanity of the actor itself portraying the character, doing it to the real fucking human, you know, to the real actor, or whatever you want to call it, worker, whatever, if you want to be a fucking stickler.
Independent contractor.
But, like, the real dude. Real dude has those real dude injuries that's going to leave real scars that's going to affect his career and maybe getting work in the future. I mean, it worked for Sabu, but Sabu was an ugly motherfucker as is. But even then, he was blackballed by a lot of places because it's like, we don't want that guy. That guy is just a fucking, bloodhound, he can't work a real match. Yeah. You know, he never got that respect, even though he was a really, really good fucking wrestler, but he also did the really stupid, crazy, death-defying shit, and that defined him as a character. And I'm afraid that somebody that was on the rise for being maybe the next AJ Styles, maybe the next generation's AJ Styles, rather, is going to be cut and be like, okay, forget him. You know, he does too much stupid shit in the ring, you know? And that kind of goes for both guys, not just Fox, but for Fox and Killshot. So I don't know. Guys, in the live chat, or if you're not live, you're watching this later, I need help on this. I need help to see what the rest of the wrestling world thinks about this and the brutality in this match and how it comes across in context of like all the other brutal ass matches that happen for no reason. Like all the fucking backyard shit that happens that...
Falling off the roof of a building.
Yeah, that was CZW where they're on top of the building. They fell off into a truck bed that had two tables, one of them on fire, and a bunch of light poles underneath or light bulbs underneath. Like, what the fuck's the point of that? Like, I didn't fucking approve of that shit. I mean, that's stupid. That's unsafe.
Yeah.
But is this right on the border? Is this past the border? Is it not past the border? Should it be match of the year worthy? I don't know. Guys, I need help. How does the rest of humanity and the rest of wrestling fans feel about this? Please tell me.
Well, we'll transition because we're not done with these two guys. Episode 2 started off with a unique opportunity for somebody.
Hold on. Uh-oh. Ryan immediately says this. As to the violence, there's a reason why they don't do that stuff in WWE anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
So, a unique opportunity.
Unique opportunity. Battle Royal.
The Mac wins it. Dario's like, guess what? I'm going to give you a Trios title match.
Yeah.
But he sounds him by himself. He's like, you going to find two guys? Nah, Dario's going to pick them. Fucking Dante Fox and Killshot, who just beat the shit out of each other, now have to team with the Mac against, I forget what the they're called, but it's Reptile Tribe. Pindar, Luchasaurus, and Drago.
Pindar, Vivora.
There you go.
Vivora. And Drago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, after watching the fucking brutality of that first match, and then Dario coming out with this fucking maniacal laugh saying, yeah, you got to team with those two. I marked out because, again, going back to the story, if I fucking forget all the rest of that stuff and just go back to the story, I'm like, Dario, you sick fuck. You know, and I loved it. Because that's exactly what the unique opportunities are. You win something badass, but there's a downside to it. And the downside is you got a team with two guys that presumably fucking hate each other, and they're presumably on their deathbeds. Yeah. So
at least one of them.
At least.
First impression of Katrina's debut wrestling in Lucha Underground.
Cool. I wasn't completely hyped for the match. Katrina doing what she did, all right, cool. She wasn't like a technical marvel. She wasn't, you know, doing a whole lot of stuff that made me go, oh man, that's really impressive. But it was still brutal, and it still had that oh shit, this is Lucha Underground factor, because they did what Lucha Underground does really well, which is downplay the negatives, accentuate the positives. They took the blood feud between Katrina and Ivelisse, which we had forgotten about because Ivelisse hasn't been around. Because
apparently that match was made in the first or second episode of the third season of this season. So it was made early. It was made very early because
And then we didn't even see them for the entirety of season three almost.
Because Ivelisse had injured her ankle again, and Katrina's still busy because she has like eight significant others out there.
Yeah.
And
But Lucha Underground did a very good job of putting those video packages together to where it reminded us, and it go, oh, wow, oh, yeah, okay, this is why they hate each other. Oh, all right. And then she went out there, Katrina went out there, grabbed a microphone, called her a bitch, and then, boom, Ivelisse goes running out there and starts waylaying on her.
Oh, I fucking loved it.
It was great. So, I mean, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of technical stuff. And I know Ivelisse can be a really good technical wrestler, but that's not what this match was about. It was about, again, much like in the war match, it was about the brutality. Mm-hmm. And it was more along the lines of what brutality matches are that I would – as far as I think it would normally go. She was using the beer bottles over Ivelisse's head. I think it was three beer bottles. I would think that, and I would like to believe, so I'm going to believe that they were, you know, gimmicked beer bottles, and that the color that Ivelisse got was, you know, regular, like, blade job or something like that, safe color that she got. So I'm not like, oh my god, no, fucking violence,
the humanity.
I'm not like that with this.
Someone because, please think of the children.
Yeah, this is something that we've seen that we know wrestlers can pull off. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'm cool with this. But the jumping on hitting and doing the punches and the kicks and all that, it was good. So it was good.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about that,
man? There's a rebellious charm to Ivelisse that I can't pinpoint. I don't know what it is about her, but her and her character, when she's on Lucha Underground television, you want to root for a girl like her. And Katrina just like ditching the whole wrestling like within 30 seconds and trying to go find inanimate objects because you know she can't beat her.
Yeah.
So it was entertaining. I liked what I saw.
When she went into Dario's office and Dario looked, this is beautiful right here. Dario, you sick fuck.
I think that's going to be an ongoing theme throughout this episode.
Yes.
And then we ended episode two, hair versus mask.
Okay. Can I rewind back to that same match again? Go. Porsche says this, sitting on the couch when in the live chat. For Lucha Underground story with Killshot versus Fox, if it was like Left 4 Dead in enemy territory, I'd be pissed off enough to go through all that hardcore shit like that. Mm-hmm. So she kind of agrees with you that the story called for it. And I'm not saying that the story doesn't call for it. I get it that the story is there for them to be pissed off enough where it happens. But again, I would see that in a movie where, you know, they could work their Hollywood magic to do the fucking shit. But not like the real life actors to do it for realsies. You know, but that's where my fucking issue is. But yeah, basically Porsche is agreeing with you. So give yourself a thumbs up for agreeing with you.
Hair versus mask.
She just gave me a look like she's typing something right now. Wait, hold on. What? Well, say what you want to say.
Okay, well, Lucha Underground's always said we're a TV show first, wrestling show second.
True. I get that. But in the production, okay, what she said was Lucha Underground is a TV show first and a wrestling show second. I get that. But wrestling, or excuse me, TV shows and movies do their fucking brutality with prosthetics and CGI. And not real shit. Like you watch the Talking Dead. Like, hey, how'd you make that zombie look good? And they show the guy back in the production truck. Well, we took some red food dye and we mixed it with some gelatin and we put it on this prosthetic here, and that's how we made it look like his eyeball popped out. You know, it's like not really for realsies. But the man who plays AR Fox really fucking bled his own real motherfucking blood.
I honestly am surprised that you care that much about that.
Why?
Because it's fucking pro wrestling. You know, it doesn't matter how much danger you put yourself in. You're always in danger when you're in wrestling. It doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
So I'm actually surprised that you're going that far. But you have your reasons. I understand it completely.
I think the argument that I want people to argue against me with is
why go that far?
No. Is it was their choice. Okay. That's the thing that'll make me shut my mouth. Hey, it was their choice to do it, and they said, yeah, I'm cool with it.
But what is their choice?
Okay, then that's the argument to use against me. No, that's the one that I have no rebut for. I'm like, okay, well, he chose to do it himself. Okay, that's fine. You know, like, all right, he's a dumbass for doing it to himself. All right, fine. Fuck him. He's a dumbass, you know.
And the other thing is, if you also want to look at it business-wise, not to jump the gun, but there's going to be a lot of main level guys that were in this smorgasbord that are not going to come back for season 4.
That's true too.
So if you're looking for somebody that says, "Hey, you know what? You can put the strap on. You can put the rocket on me. I could carry the company. This is how far I'm willing to go."
Yeah.
To prove it to you, then that also goes back to that's why they're making the decision on their own.
Yeah.
You know, you can easily just say, "You know what? Nope."
Yeah. Cuz see, I'm not a pro wrestler. I've never been athletic enough, and I always have to have these glasses, and I've never been able to do anything. But I know that, like, from being friends on Facebook with a lot of pro wrestlers, one of the things that they'll say, and from even the history of our show, you know, interviewing a lot of people, the mentality between the actual workers and people like us that aren't workers is that I remember something Steve DeMarco said one time. It's like, but you're not doing that shit to me. When they were talking about doing a certain move, I can't remember the specific move was that we were talking about. He's like, okay, that's cool, but he's not doing that shit to me. I got my career I got to worry about. Mm-hmm. Being backstage at DZW with other guys who, you know, are trying to make it in the business and trying to achieve that balance of this is as far as we want to go right now so that we could get noticed, but also not get hurt. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to strike that balance, and then you see guys that are doing some insane shit that's gonna get them way fucking noticed, but they're good. They literally did hurt themselves. It's like, oh man, well damn, that sucks for these guys that like are trying to like preserve themselves as athletes to not do that in front of smaller crowds, but then they get fucking frog jumped by these people that are willing to do the stupid, unsafe shit. Well, shit, that means now I need to do the stupid, unsafe shit.
Well, the excuse that I always fall back on, the rebuttal I like to fall back on is Steve Austin.
Okay, what's that?
Got dropped on his head SummerSlam 97.
Good point.
And he made the decision, hey, I can either take the surgery and be out for 2 years and lose my spot, knowing that I'm on the ascent towards, like, superstardom.
Right.
Or I risk it, knowing what the risks are, and keep going to see how far I can go as opposed to how long I will last.
Yeah.
What's your priority? How far are you willing to go, or how long you're willing to last? And that goes back to your core, what you want to be rebutted, is that it's the wrestler's choice.
Okay. Then I have no argument against that. it's the wrestling show.
Steve Austin got you.
Not the Steve Austin. Just the thing that you said. It's the wrestler's choice. I'm like, all right. Well, if he wants to be the dumbass, if he wants to be the dumbass to do that, fine. But if I'm a wrestler, he ain't giving that shit to me. Thank you, Steve DeMarco. Nice shout out there to Steve DeMarco. Who'd have thunk it?
I was thinking after the first episode that I didn't think anything was going to top the Hell of War match because I had my expectations pretty high, and even then, it didn't just exceed my expectations, it fucking eclipsed my expectations. Then we get to Hair versus Mask. You want to talk, and that goes back to what a lot of the criteria when we think about match of the weeks or match of the years, where all the planets align, the divergence, and everything clicks. Crowd, commentary, the workers, the story, the secondary characters, which was in Melissa Santos and Mariposa.
Yes.
Good fucking Lord. This was such a fun match.
Yes.
It still had a little color, but it wasn't to the point where you want to throw up last night's dinner.
Yes.
You know, and it still told a really good story. Good Lord, it was fucking awesome, dude. I fucking loved it. Mm-hmm. It the second night finished just as high for me as the first night. If we're ranking them episode by episode.
Yeah.
Episode one's right here, episode two is like right there.
Oh yeah. I absolutely fucking love the job that Marty is doing being the Moth. He is so good at playing this role. He is so good at being the fucking creeper to the point where when he was in distress, when he was hooked up, handcuffed to the rails, he was still saying stupid shit to Melissa. Still trying to bite her as she tried to walk past him. Still trying to, like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And just be fucking deranged.
Yeah.
And had, you know, his hair shaved off and all that. And it was beautiful. The story of Mariposa basically turning on the Moth, I think that's interesting. And that could lead itself into more stuff coming to season 4. Because throughout all of the story of Marty the Moth being fucking insane, Mariposa has been right there behind him, almost in support of his insanity, you know, if not, you know, adjacent to his insanity. And her, like, having that moment of clarity where he moves her in the way to take the flip by Phoenix, mm-hmm. you know, to get in harm's way, and then her storming off and then showing back up at the end of the match, thinking that she's there to comfort her brother, and it's like, no, brother, you're gonna take your medicine. I dug it, man. I dug the story, dude. And man, that's the thing, dude. Like, story is so important in Lucha Underground, and that story, it felt like it was all wrapped up and done. But I also could see how coming out of it, you have new story that you could talk about later.
Besides, this is Lucha Underground, where all sexes are created equal. So if I get to see a match between Mariposa and her brother, Marty the Moth, that's going to be fucking lit. Dude.
Ding!
That's going to be fucking awesome, dude. And again, you gushed over the secondary role of Mariposa. I'm going to take a moment to gush over the secondary role of Melissa Santos.
Yes.
You called it when she announced that match with her booty shorts. You knew she was going to be up to something.
Yeah.
And she, like, played into Marty the Moth's brain. She's like, I dropped the scissors. Let's go. Let's just leave him. We'll run away. We'll take off right now. We'll go make babies. And as soon as he fell for it, man, it was over with.
She like slapped him across the face.
Slapped him a couple of times. Yeah. And then she actually like hit him below the nether regions.
Yeah.
And she jumped on Phoenix to like make sure that Marty wouldn't kick out.
When he was doing the pinfall. Oh, yeah. Man. Beautiful.
Dude, Melissa.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Dude, yeah, but I don't know what else to say of that match. It's fucking awesome. It's awesome, dude.
Yeah. I don't know if I would say that was my – see, I want to say that the Fox match is definitely match of Ultima Lucha.
So far.
With an asterisk. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to put that in a different category for right now, I'd want to say that this match with Mariposa with the Moth – might be second or third runner-up for the best match of the whole goddamn thing.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Well, we got some more.
We got some more.
We got some more. We're bleeding into night 3. Last luchadora standing, Taya against Sexy Star.
You know what I say about last man, last woman, last luchadora, luchador standing matches?
No, sir, I don't like it.
No, sir, I don't like them. Because to get a near fall, you have to count to 7 or 8. And like, holy shit, come on. Okay, yeah, we get it. They're not going to stay down. Let's move on. I hate last person standing matches. I hate them. But the few times that I have liked them, it's maybe been 1 or 2 for WWE, and like a few times Lucha Underground's pulled it off. In this particular match, I lost the concept that it was last man standing. I forgot that it was, or last luchador standing. I fucking forgot it was last luchador standing until at the very end, after all the fucking craziness happened, and it's like 9, 10. It's, oh shit, 10 count. Oh yeah, that's not a count out. That's last luchador. Oh, no, duh. Like, I wasn't reminded about it constantly, how like yeah. WWE does, where it's like, all right, the ref's got to count. 1.
No, and then I punch you in the face and you fall. And already the ref's right there going,
like, oh, 1. Like, oh, God. And it's not like 1 per second. It's like 1. Wait 3 seconds. 2. I know. Fucking fuck, man. But no, the cadence of the ref was quick enough to where it was like an actual 10 seconds. Yeah. And I didn't even realize it until they were already counting 9, 10. It's done. I'm like, oh, fuck. So I was able to enjoy, and I'm going to sound like Dario, the violence of the match without getting distracted by the flaws, the inherent flaws of last person standing matches. So big fucking kudos to them. Now, aside from the fact that it was Sexy Star and Taya, because let's face it, Sexy Star's kind of fallen from grace as far as wrestling fans are concerned. Like, I don't really care about her that much anymore now because, you know, I know that she's not going to be in Lucha Underground. And I'm pretty sure Taya's not going to be in Lucha Underground anymore.
She's already on Impact, Taya Valkyrie.
Yeah, and what Sexy Star did is not cool. Like, she shouldn't be hurting people on the realsies, you know.
Is that your word of the night?
Yeah, I guess so. She shouldn't be hurting people, you know, and that's exactly what she did. And when she tried to, when she was confronted about it, she came up with this flimsy ass thing that didn't make any sense. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. I don't want to support her anymore. You know, so like that kind of lowered my standards, lowered my interest. I didn't really care. All that being said, the match was still really fucking good. Yeah. So yeah. Hooray for lowered expectations and exceeding them.
Okay, well, I'm sure you didn't have many expectations before the match started. Trios tag titles.
Uh-huh.
What'd you think of the Trios tag titles?
Porsche disagrees. She said, I tried to remove the controversy of Sexy Star out of my mind, but I couldn't give a flying flip about it. All right, I'm sorry. What?
Trios tag title match.
This was fun. It was fun. Uh-oh. This, while watching it and while watching the Hell of War match,
you're reminded of the humanity.
I was still debating in my mind what I felt about that match. Mm-hmm. And I know you said that you asked me if seeing the piece of flesh on the gurney is the thing that solidified it for me. I think what further solidified it, like fucking rock solid solidified it.
The back of AR, of Dante's back.
Dante's back after the bandages fell off over the course of that match. And you see that dude's going to have real life scars on his back. And his back was just fucking peppered with gashes and like tears. And it was nasty. And that just made me think, fuck, man. That's when I was like, dude, oh man, that's just disgusting. You know, it's like, damn, he's really gonna go through this with the rest of his life for a show that might have been canceled at the time when they recorded it, but they didn't really know.
Well, it's like, gonna be on Netflix, so he'll be a legend forever.
I guess so. You know, it's like, ah, fuck, man. You know, so it's like, oh,
geez. I'm gonna use that as a positive because right from the beginning, when Pindar tried to throw A.R. Fox on the ropes, A.R. Fox stopped. He didn't even want to hit the ropes. Yes. I've never seen that in pro wrestling, in a hardcore match.
That he sold
it that hard that he doesn't even want to hit the ropes because he knows right off the bat he's going to get hurt.
Yep.
You know, I want to say maybe 95% of the moves that Killshot and Dante were doing, after the impact of the move, they were selling their own injuries because that may they're not have been, as fuck.
That may not have been selling. That may have been
for real. For realsies. Arnold's missing out.
I know. Yeah, poor Arnold.
And in the end, we got new Trios tag champs. And
hold on. What did I say immediately before the match? Right before the first bell started, I said, well, they being Mac and the two war guys, they can't win this because Lucha Underground's already done this where they've had Trios champs be the fucking odd couple, the guys who don't get along. They can't have them win again. What happened?
They won.
They won.
But it brought the story together. It's a brand new chapter. Now the war is over. And now the two combatants are actually on the same team. And they actually accepted each other. Even during the match, Dante's like cheering on Killshot, like, bitch, get the fuck up already. So come in and go home.
It's like America and Japan.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we're going to drop a fucking nuclear bomb on you. But, you know, give it 20, 30 years, and then we're going to be happy friends.
Yeah. Once we realized how good sushi was, it's like, yeah, you're worth keeping.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we got new Trios tag champs, and Pindar got killed.
Pindar did get killed.
Yeah.
But that was towards the end. Well, that was at the end of Ultima Lucha Tres, number four.
Yeah.
That was the end of the fourth episode where Pindar got killed because of his insubordination. Mm-hmm. Basically, Cobra Moon said, here, use this, had some sort of foreign object, a chain or something. He's like, no, I'm going to do it myself. And that hesitation cost him the match.
Yeah.
So, and then he got killed for it because, you know, people get killed on Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Which every time somebody's gotten killed on Lucha Underground, that's been in those weird-ass post-production things where it's obviously not in the middle of the ring. Somebody didn't go out there with the sword and really chop his head off in the middle of the fucking ring.
Let it go.
I'm just saying.
Let it go. Gift of the Gods ladder match, Son of Havoc, Pentagon Dark. Was it too obvious that Pentagon was winning this, or was there? Did you actually have a slither of optimism that
I had a slither of optimism? Well, maybe more than a sliver. Maybe I thought maybe it was a 30-40% chance that Mad Dog was going
to 30-40%.
I thought so. It wasn't quite 50-50. I knew that he was the Son of Havoc was the underdog, but I was like, all right, there's a good chance that he might actually win this. So, you know, I'm going to enjoy this match for what it is. I mean, in hindsight, after watching all of it together and realizing that fucking Vampiro had this fucking elaborate plot all along, yeah, okay, it makes sense. But in the moment, I was like, yeah, why not give fucking Son of Havoc this thing a big win over fucking Pentagon? Pentagon's not with Vampiro anymore. Pentagon's just kind of going to leave the company as we know it anyway. So, whatever, give it to fucking Son of Havoc. Okay, cool. No. And so I was wrong. I was wrong, but I sat back and I enjoyed the match. And I liked the match. And I was uncertain at times who was actually going to win the match. So it was pleasant. It was a pleasant surprise. I'm going to put it up there with the Marty the Moth match. I loved it a lot. And there was a lot of athleticism going on in the match. There was a lot of
Ladders.
This had the brutality that was a different kind of brutality, where it wasn't all about color. It wasn't all about cutting people open.
It was about getting hit in the balls with ladders.
Yeah. it was a more traditional kind of stuff that you would normally see, but it was just done to the point where you're like, you know, and yeah. it was cool. The spectacle of it was still there, you know. So I enjoyed it. Do you have anything else to say about that match? Because I feel like I'm selling it short for as much as I like.
Oh, no. 3 for 3 for me, man. The main event of the first night, yes. The main event of the second night, well, episodes, and then the main event of the third episode, they're all like, man, there has to be a lull at some point going as good as they are so far.
Uh-huh.
Before we go into night four, is there anything in there that you want to add in there?
Chat? No. They're just
okay.
Going off on their own stuff.
2-hour season finale.
Oh, yes.
God after damn. Watching 2 hours and 15 minutes mm-hmm. so far, yeah. Mm-hmm. We started off with the steel cage match.
Yes.
well, one steel cage match.
Right.
Because it didn't take long for Matanza to throw Dragon Azteca out the motherfucker, and Dragon Azteca
won. But
theoretically, because he both feet hit the floor.
Right.
And
for as fair as Dario is, despite the fact that he has his own agenda, sometimes he does things that goes against his own agenda in the thought of fairness, in the honor of fairness, in the spirit of fairness, he'll do stuff that even goes against his own hidden agenda. This was probably the first time that I see him go against fairness for his own agenda.
Yeah.
That was the first time I've ever seen that. Like, he's always had a very, very strong sense of his own agenda, but he's also had a stronger sense of fairness. And this was the first time I've seen it flipped, where he went out there as like, No, we're restarting this match. You didn't win. Get your ass back in the ring.
Vampiro's explanation was flawless, though, because Vampiro's whole motto was Dragon Azteca did not escape. He was thrown out. He did not willingly get out.
Yes.
So therefore, he is not a winner. I'm actually siding with Dario, and I completely bought it, too.
I bought it.
Damn, poor Dragon, dude.
Dude,
he got murdered. He got murdered. And then, before the corpse even hit the ground, freaking
Black Lotus
splashed from the top of the cage down to Azteca.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was beautiful.
I know that there were a lot of loose ends with that storyline, right? There
still are.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I think this particular storyline, the saga with the Black Lotus and Matanza and Rey Mysterio and Dragon Azteca Senior and Junior, and how Dario fits in on this, my head has been spinning a little bit as to what the hell's actually happening. I think this is the most messy storyline Lucha Underground has. And I think that they tried to tie up a lot of stuff with this storyline in this match, and I hope that they did, because I was even confused with what the hell was happening at the end of the match there. So
I think I got it. It's not done.
Okay.
So Black Lotus is still under the impression that Dragon Azteca's father killed Black Lotus's father. So she's taking it out on Dragon Azteca and helping him by having him murdered by Matanza in the ring. In the cage, just for Cueto to let the cat out of the bag that, hey, yeah, I've been lying to you the whole time. Which basically, Dario's been behind the whole thing.
Right.
And
but see, that's the thing, though. What was the whole thing?
He's behind the murder of her father.
Yeah, I know that. But, I mean, to what end? Why?
Yes.
Okay.
That means you need to watch season 4.
Oh. Okay.
So, yeah, after the steel cage matches, we had a triple threat match that turned out to be an elimination.
Right.
Gauntlet.
Because Dario, in the interest of fairness,
mm-hmm.
has said that, hey, we want to have a definitive winner because this gauntlet is muy importante. We need to have an elimination style. So I was happy about that.
Not surprised that Jeremiah was the first one eliminated.
Not surprised at all.
But goddamn, did he put up such a fight?
Yeah.
I want to know where he gets all that energy from, because he's constantly.
Oh, yeah.
He's perpetual motion personified.
I want to say that while I think Pentagon versus Son of Havoc and Phoenix versus Marty the Moth are probably right there, if we're putting aside the war match, I think those are right there with being like 2 and 3 or 3 and 2, whatever. This three-way match, I was expecting it to be the best match. I was expecting it to be right there. But then it fell way shorter than I thought it would be.
Really?
And I wanted it to be there with those other two, if not number one. But the same problem that I had with the war match happened in this particular match. With the glass. Same thing with the glass.
Neil Mortis' arm looked like an awesome red tattoo, and then I realized, oh, wait a minute.
He doesn't have a red tattoo. That's not a red tattoo. But you know what it reminded me of? That made me, again, question whether or not I'm actually being fair to myself, because see, this is what I was doing as far as what I thought about the war match. This made me question it, because the way Matanza looked on his arm reminded me.
You mean Mortis?
Yeah, yeah. On Mortis' arm reminded me of Abyss. Mm-hmm. I fucking loved Abyss, and I love Monster Ball matches and the fucking crazy ass shit that he did back when TNA was like really good, like 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. Like, and when Abyss was like a big part of the fucking company. Now everybody talks about Rude and Styles and fucking Eric Young. Everybody's fucking forgot about Abyss. Abyss was like the big fucking thing. And I was like, damn, am I a hypocrite for thinking the way that I think about the war match, watching it here in this match, and thinking, wow, he looks just like Abyss. That was cool. Because Abyss would get all – he had – remember Abyss had like this tribal tattoo, and then it wanted to get his scarred in half because, you know, like, oh, man, but – like, oh shit.
Maybe
you know?
You've grown up as a man.
Maybe. I don't know. But I don't know, man. I'm just thinking that, oh, okay, that's cool. But then it gave me that mixed feeling again. Then, what's his name? Jeremiah Crane coming out with the chopsticks or whatever you call it.
Oh my God.
Putting it into the top of Cage's dome.
He stabbed Cage it. With a handful of like
wooden skewers.
Wooden skewers.
And they then, stuck in his head.
And then he DDT'd him.
And he's still stuck in his head.
And you could see the blood start to fall from Cage. When, oh, my God.
And then that's when I went back. Poor,
that dude kicked out. He kicked out, right?
He kicked out.
Oh.
That's when I went back the other way and thought, man, this is some CZW bullshit that isn't going to propel anyone any higher than Lucha Underground. They're not going to get signed to New Japan. They're not going to get signed to WWE. People are going to look down on that and be like, why the fuck? You stupid ass fucking spot monkey, but I guess this wouldn't be a spot. You violence monkey. Like, why the hell are you doing that kind of shit? You know, like, dude.
Oh, man. That.
So that brought me back around to the same thing. So, like, I don't know. So that one, like, if I'm going to put the war match and this match side by side, I would definitely say the war match, because they did the spot with the glass first and they did it better and they did it twice.
And it called, I think the story was stronger in that feud.
Yeah,
it would have been in this triple threat Bukkake for
exactly
for what's her face.
And the gauntlet, while I think the gauntlet is a very important thing, I don't know why it's very important. I know it has something to do with the god inhabiting you, but did the god already inhabit Cage? I don't know. Just because he takes off the gauntlet, does that mean he's not inhabiting it anymore? Well, okay, Jeremiah was just trying to get it to get into the pants of Katrina. So, all right, he's really doing all that just for some pussy? Like, yeah, dude, find some other pussy. But
you know how old Katrina's pussy is in this story?
Oh, they're very spirited juice. But
in the end,
the thing that made me mark out and you mark out is,
so Mil Muertes wins this triple threat. He earns the gauntlet. Dario Cueto comes out with it. Katrina grabs it and she hands it to Mil, and he puts it on and he does his pose. And then he does his pose. I'm guessing gauntlet.
He does Roman Reigns' pose where he went down and he hit the center
Aztec,
of the mat.
Yeah, on the center of the Aztec.
And the lights.
You hear a thundering sound. I was thinking it was from the gauntlet, and the lights went out. And then like half of the lights go back on, and it's King Cuerno beating the ever-loving shit out of Bofum.
He grabs Katrina and just power slams Katrina like she ain't never been fucking power slammed before.
He's like, rookie, you gonna learn today.
Like, I ain't even released, bitch. Like, boom. Like, holy fuck.
And his story, I have not forgotten. He is a game hunter. He has trophies on his wall. His biggest trophy now is the gauntlet. He took the gauntlet and ran.
I think he doesn't know that the gauntlet has like all this power. I think he just thinks that, well, this is something important.
Everybody
today.
Wants it, everyone, so apparently it has value.
Yeah.
I have things of value up here.
He didn't put it on.
He did. But
at the end of the match, but at the end of the show, it's in a glass case locked up on his wall just as a fucking trophy.
I don't think, table, right
I don't
there.
Think he knows, because when Cage first put it on, there was a little bit of electric stuff. He was like, all right, whatever. You know, yeah. He didn't really realize its full power. He didn't ever realize its full power, but he started realizing it had some power after a while, yeah. Cage. So now I'm sure Cuerno has no fucking idea. So
he's going to just let it sit there in a crew interest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, your mom has a bunch of shit out in the shed and she doesn't know that like one of those things is a precious antique that's worth like $5 million. Yeah. And so she goes on to Antiques Roadshow. Oh yeah, this is a coin. It's just worth like 2 cents. This, oh yeah, this is worth like a dollar. Why'd you even bring me this? Throw this in the trash. Ooh. Oh my.
You see, in the late 1400s.
I'll give you $25 for this right now. Why? Like, that's what's going on here.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's trying to rip me off with the $25, Mijo. What do you think? Like, don't sell it!
And then we get to the main event.
Yes, the main event.
Tell me about Taya's movie skills.
Oh, wow. I didn't mean for that to sound so loud. oops. God damn it. That was adorable.
Adorable is the word you would use.
I don't know if, okay. I think that's the word I'm going with. It was fucking adorable. It was supposed to be campy. It was supposed to fit Johnny Mundo. And we've seen a lot of these spots of Johnny Mundo training and saying stupid shit like, I don't have time for pants. And like, like all that kind of dumbass shit. But it's all been shot from the perspective of us just seeing what happens backstage because we're privy to what happens backstage. This particular video was shot through the eyes of Taya because we've always seen Taya running around with the fucking cam all season long. This was the culmination of it. And it was just fucking adorable, man. The fucking cheesy swipes, the star swipes, the fucking Johnny Mundo being
he's
Johnny
athletic.
Mundo.
He has history. He has titles.
And he's dead sexy. Dead,
he's fucking hot.
Yeah, fucking hot. Oh, God. Like, you can see the bias, but the bias is just fucking adorable. And it made sense. It made sense.
Oh, man. It raised my anticipation level for this because it brought a sense of humor that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Especially later on in the match where everybody else in the Worldwide Underground comes in and starts wrecking shit mm-hmm. and Prince Puma. And then Angelico shows up and beats the fuck out of everybody. And then Jack Evans is like, ah!
He can speak now.
Yeah. Oh, dude, that freaking match, though.
All right.
Go. I know it's like you have 8 different opinions of that match, but you're trying to pick which one you want to say. Let's go.
I kind of want to lump because Puma did 3 matches there. Yes, 3. I'm counting that right. He did 3 matches there. The first match with Mundo and then the Worldwide Underground coming out. After they got rid of the Worldwide Underground and Helico came back, the match seemed to have restarted. I know it wasn't officially restarted, but like in the pacing, the way the match, whatever, it felt like it was de facto restarted. So I feel like that was the second match. And then, of course, the third match was him against Pentagon. So
why was it him against Pentagon? Number one, Puma defeated Johnny Mundo.
Yes, Puma defeated
Puma
Johnny
defeated Mundo.
Mundo
won new, the title.
New Lucha Underground
and saved his career.
Right.
He's good. He's there. But Johnny Mundo runs away to lick his wounds. Then Dario Cueto's infamous catchphrase, hold on, hold on, hold on. We're not done yet.
Yeah. And
what happened?
He did the thing that, like, I kind of put 2 and 2 together before he actually said it. So I was like, oh, shit, Pentagon's going to cash in his gift to the gods.
You just wanted it to be made sense.
I know. I said, oh, this is going to be fucking stupid, though, because his rule is that give him at least a week to promote it, mm-hmm. you know, that way, because it's still a business. I'm like, oh, goddamn. But the first thing out of Dario's mouth was, well, I know it's my rule, but rules are meant to be broken like yeah. bones. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. That was the explanation that I needed. Thank you so much. Let's move on, sir. Yes, give me the match now. Yes, please, please, please. So, yeah, the match is happening. Puma, a wounded Puma, versus Pentagon Dark for the championship. Now, the reason why I got thrown for a loop when Puma won is that, oh shit, I thought Puma was leaving. But oh yeah, that's right. Mundo's left already. Oh shit. Well then, okay. Well, I guess they're just gonna have it on Puma, and I don't know. Pentagon. Oh shit. Oh, that makes sense. Wait, no. Pentagon's leaving too. What the fuck? So I was like this again. Like I didn't know how to predict it because I couldn't rely on my smarky insider knowledge on it, because all of them were in the same fucking boat where they're leaving.
Even when Dario said it's not just the title match, one person's leaving this match champion, the other one's leaving the temple forever. Altogether. It's still career versus career for the title. And even then, I know they're all gone. So what the fuck's gonna happen? So
yeah. I had no idea. Call it. No idea.
Oh, dude, and then what even threw the wrench even more, what I was not expecting in this match, 3 minutes in, Pentagon breaks Prince Puma's arm.
Right from the jump.
Dude, he had been through whooping from Johnny Mundo, whooping from the Worldwide Underground.
More whooping from Mundo.
Now he's surprised that the match is happening, and already, boom, you're one arm short.
One arm short. And then the medic comes out, and like, hey, get the hell out of here, medic. Just give me your bag of goodies. And it was just tape. He just wrapped tape around his arm because, yeah, tape fixes broken arms. Yeah, and he taped up his arm.
If anything, they should have used
crazy
that.
Crazy son of a bitch.
He should have used some of that spray the soccer players use, where you just go, yeah. Shh, and then they walk around like nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Rub some dirt in it. Put some tussin on it.
Oh, man. And even still, the near falls and the spots.
Yes. Afterwards, yes, Porsche's right. Afterwards, Stryker did say that it was perhaps a dislocation. Mm. Okay,
because Stryker's a doctor from the commentary, and he can see the angle, right?
Well, that's the thing about it too. I could suspend the disbelief there, because you could say, "Oh, it's a broken arm," but no one really knows if it's a broken arm until you get in the back and you see a medic. Mm-hmm. So, if whatever happened to his arm right then and there happened to his arm, it could have been a broken arm. It could have been a dislocation. It could have just been a hyperextension. Could have been a sprain. We don't know. It's just, ow, it hurts. So, I can believe that he just wrapped his arm and kept going, because, oh, damn, maybe it's not a broken arm. Oh, he's still competing, but, oh, it hurts a lot. So I'm okay with that explanation there. I'm willing to give that a pass, especially if Stryker said it himself. It's like, oh, maybe it's just a dislocation.
Yeah.
But, dude, that happening from jump on that match, oh, my God. And I really didn't know where to go with this. I really didn't know. Is Puma going to fucking overcome the odds? Because he already overcome the odds, in my mind, two other matches. Is he going to overcome the odds here? Holy shit. I don't know. I was so invested, and I was so fucking mind blown by what was happening. And
half of the match, you're laying there on the couch going like this.
Yes. I don't know how I can do this. So I'm gonna tell this to you. If we want to say a match of Ultima Lucha, and if everybody's hell
bent, there's two separate title matches,
and you're hell bent on it being the war match, okay, fine. But dude, can we just count all the stuff that Puma did at the end all together?
No.
Because I don't think you can have one without the other.
No, you can't have one without the other.
No, remember, and I don't know which one to pick.
All you need is context. For example, we overrode the New Japan match from Wrestle Kingdom. That's Kenny Omega versus Okada number one. We replaced it with Kenny Omega Okada number three from the G1 Climax. And you didn't have to watch the entire G1 Climax. 30 seconds from commentary, bruises, the bandages from Okada, the Omega limping around. You know that these fuckers have been through an entire tournament. The entire month.
Yeah.
And they're both beat to shit. And you can tell and you can already tell. All you need is a nice 30-second description, just like you say. So it's two separate matches.
You well, then pick I one don't, or the I other. I don't know which one to pick then, because if I have to pick between the two, the better match
there's
in ring,
more action.
The better match in ring wise is the stuff with Mundo. The better
story.
Oh my God, story is with Pentagon Dark.
It just depends what you covet more.
Oh, how do you feel if you had to pick between the two?
If I had to pick between the oh, that's hard, dude. You know what?
Oh, so you give me shit for saying it's hard, no, and then you
no,
say
no. The problem is, I'm gonna tell you exactly why you're struggling.
Okay.
Because you and I are big Cero Miedo fans.
Oh, so is everybody in that goddamn temple.
Oh, dude, ole ole Cero Miedo. Dude, I'm going to be completely biased and say that I would pick the Pentagon-Prince Puma match because I'm a huge fucking Pentagon mark. I've been watching the show for 3 seasons and wondering when the fuck are you going to pull this trigger with Pentagon Dark, you know? But again, on top of that was dude. I was not expecting this match to happen the way it happened. I wasn't expecting Prince Puma's arm to get damaged that soon. And then the story of him fighting out of freaking Pentagon's finisher moves, him actually using some of Pentagon's moves, them going back. Dude, it's not just the bias in me that's picking this. The story enhanced everything.
Dude, the story of Vampiro putting himself out there to have been the mastermind of it all, of all of it, the whole fucking thing, the whole reason why, like, he brainwashed Puma, not because he thought Puma should be the successor to Pentagon, but he brainwashed Puma to build him up to be the lamb to slaughter for fucking Pentagon so that Pentagon could have the title, all for him to not be the guy in charge and for him to have a master too? What the fuck? What the hell is happening here?
That's where the mind fuck comes in, where there's so many layers to the story, and you're already invested in the characters. Even before fucking Lucha Underground, when you told me 3 months before they started taping these shows that Vampiro was going to be on commentary, I'm in. So this goes back to like late 90s WCW Vampiro. Okay. The evolution of his character from a pro wrestler to a commentator to a manager to a teacher to a student. Because he's still a student. Apparently he has someone to look up to.
Yeah. You know, who the hell is this guy?
And I don't know what the fuck that was, but god damn.
I was so mind fucked by the end of it all. Like,
and this is before we go to the special credits. This is just at the end of the match, Puma's ready to kill Pentagon with the 630.
Yeah.
Vampiro's cheering him on just to pull Pentagon Dark out of the way.
Oh, and Matt Stryker going fucking crazy.
And Matt Stryker telling me, don't sit next to me. I'll get a kid from over here to do commentary with me. Go fuck yourself, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Like, everybody was playing their part to a T.
Yeah.
And then him raising freaking Mr. Smith raising Pentagon Dark's hand at the end of the whole thing. Oh my god. Oh, I don't care how many times I see it, I will never get tired of seeing the package pile driver the way Pentagon Dark does it.
Oh.
He hit the ropes, took the 2 steps, and took the little leap of faith, and
I forgot about the package pile driver in the match with Son of Havoc. Package pile driver on top of the chairs.
Oh.
Folded out chairs.
You were complaining, going, oh, there's a lot of setup in this spot. I wonder what the fuck they're going to do.
Yeah.
And the ladder was right in front of us. I was thinking somebody was going to fall on it. So when Son of Havoc was trying to do something to him and he countered with that package, we were both like, oh, done.
Yeah. It was unexpected and it was crazy.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know which one to pick. Because, again, the better wrestling match was Puma versus Mundo, but the better story, mindfuck, emotional roller coaster match is Puma versus Puma versus Pentagon Dark.
Yeah.
So, dude, I don't know which one to go with. But
that's
all if you give a fuck about the asterisk that I'm putting on the front of the war match.
Even regardless, that's a good problem to have because that just sums up why we like Lucha so much, is that there's always options. That you don't have to have one person in charge of the entire brand. Half of that roster, you can main up. Literally, this is, again, like our appreciation for Marty the Moth. He's a two-bit guy when he first got there.
Yeah.
And he's main eventing these episodes. And we're walking away going, dude, that guy could be like a big piece of the foundation of that company if they decide to do something with it.
He was a guy who wasn't tough enough, who got injured, who thought everybody thought he was supposed to win it. But WWE was like, he's injured, fuck the guy. And they didn't even sign him. And now he's like, whoa, what the fuck? WWE really fucked up on letting him go, you know? And for such a big guy, he's kind of like Mac. For such a big guy, goddamn, he's agile.
Yeah.
Damn.
You think about it, if you separated these into four different episodes, out of those four episodes,
is what they did.
You have seven different guys main eventing that episode, and all seven of those guys, because Pentagon main evented twice, all seven of those guys are worthy to have either one of those title belts.
Yeah. There.
And that's saying something from a roster that really isn't that thick.
Yeah.
Maybe, 25, 30 people tops, and that's including the women?
For as good as everything was, since I'm having such hard time picking stuff, I feel like I'm doing it a disservice to not pick one thing to be represented at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at the end of the year, we do our year in review episode, and we say, this is the match of the year. You know, but this show, well, this collection of shows that we've treated pretty much like a pay-per-view watching all together, I feel like something needs to be represented because it was so good top to bottom. This is probably the best thing that was out there this year. But I can't pick one thing to say,
I don't even know if I can either. And that goes back to what we feel of the product. I mean, it's easier for us to have match of the years from WWE or NXT because we're so inundated with content from them that you can filter out what's the really good stuff. And then somebody said it on Lucha Underground, the 1% of the 1%.
That was Mundo.
Mundo. Like, you can easily figure out the 1% of the 1% from WWE and NXT. To a lesser extent, New Japan, if you were into it enough.
Right.
But Lucha Underground, dude, every other week it's something. Every other week it's someone that you're not really looking at. Like, you would not have thought the Mac was as cool as he was now two seasons ago. You would have never thought Marty
Jannetty. The Mac is somebody else WWE just passed on.
Yeah.
They thought, it's some fat guy.
You know, how bad do I want to see on Helico versus Johnny Mundo?
So bad.
You know,
and Helico coming out and thwarting the Worldwide Underground. Being the only help that Puma got. Oh, dude, that was cool.
Unexpected help. Puma's already had friends. He's had four-man tag matches against the Worldwide Underground. So there's people that could go to his aid. So to have Angelico come out of nowhere, dude, there's so many people on that roster. There's so many matches on there. We don't need to have Lucha Underground represented with a match in our Match of the Year listings. I have no problem gushing in the first 45 minutes of our year in review episode, just mouthing off every single fucking match Lucha Underground has had that we've had as our match of the week, because they're that consistent. It's that entertaining. And I have, even now, dude, three seasons in, I have not seen a dip.
Well, I was just about to say this. Somewhere halfway through this particular season, my interest was starting to wane just
a
little bit.
Was it during the halfway point where we had that big break where this kind of felt like season four instead of season three?
Yeah, and kind of like when they were like doing some of the Cueto Cup, and it was some of the earlier rounds where it's like the entire episode is just one fucking round of the Cueto Cup. It's like, okay. And you can see them building little things here and there, planting a few seeds, and it was like, yeah, all right, cool. You know, what else is going on that week, you know?
I think the angle of their lows wasn't as sharp as the angle of their highs. I would put it that way.
Okay, yes.
And that's my biggest fear, because so many things have happened with the whole show. Even in the third season was up in the air for so long that talents, like you said, because of the humanity of it all, talents need to worry about their own best interest.
Right.
So you're seeing Johnny Mundo, Drago, Taya, Tejano in Impact, and you're seeing Pentagon and Phoenix and Wrestle Circus and at PWG, and you're seeing all these other talents spread out everywhere else. Dante Fox and Desmond Xavier, where I'm worried that a dip that is going to be as sharp as the rise Lucha's been having is going to start in season four, because I don't know what.
Yeah,
the hell
you don't know
gonna
who's going to still be around.
Like, season four can literally just be like this.
Yeah.
If there is a season four,
I mean,
if
not, okay,
why
well, hold
not just
on,
end
hold
it
on
a high note?
We're like starting to sound like we're wrapping stuff up and getting out of here. But no, we need to talk about all the end credit stuff. Dario fucking Cueto is dead. What?
He got killed by the 7-Up guy.
Yeah, he got killed by Godfrey, the guy that represents the secret society that he's a part of that wants the gods to come back to Earth.
I didn't realize a comedian could look so fucking deadly.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
He has a really good poker face.
Yes. And he basically said, you're off the hook.
For the gauntlet.
For the gauntlet, because you're going to be dead. Like, okay, so the gauntlet didn't get him killed. What got him killed? And it's weird because in Walking Dead, once somebody starts to kind of change their character just a little bit and you see them become a little bit more compassionate, that's when they die. But with Dario, it was kind of weird. Even though Dario has always been the most fucked up motherfucker, it seemed in this particular set of episodes, during Ultima Lucha, he started to unravel a little bit and become even more fucked it up in her. You know? I wonder if that's a word.
Oh, we'll put it in the HWR dictionary.
Fucked it up in her.
Fucked it up in her.
Because, you know, like I said, the thing with the Dragon Azteca, he, not in the interest of fairness, in the interest of his own best interest, restarted the match. You know,
A counter for that was the whole Pentagon story, because Pentagon literally called out Dario's like, as soon as I beat Gift of the Gods, then I'm going to be champion, and then I'm going to come after, then I have one more bone to break, and it's going to be yours. Yes, but so why would Dario actually help out a guy that's looking to end him?
Exactly.
So there's times
so where, maybe that's why that Godfrey guy fucking killed him.
Maybe Pentagon's the key.
Maybe Pentagon's the key. And see, that's the other thing. There's like, during season one and season two, there was general insidiousness.
Yeah.
And even like in the beginning of season three, there's general insidiousness. But now you could kind of see that there's layers of evil and there's different evil that's at play. And some of the evil is getting away of the other evil. Like this secret society that Dario is a part of seem to have maybe gotten in the way of whatever it is Katrina's trying to do. The means to the ends with Katrina. And we still don't know what the means to the ends of Katrina and the sister. Fucking cop is. Yeah, her sister. That's like, what the hell? What's their agenda? And then there's like the secret society. But then there's, what the fuck is Vampiro doing? And Vampiro is the one that has all the power because he has the title. So who's outdoing who and who's playing who? Did the Secret Society kill Dario basically because the Secret Society knows, hey, you just handed over all the power to the other evil faction that we're trying to out evil, so you fucked us up, so now you die. Like, what? So I don't know. Yeah. So there's plenty more questions to go into season four. So if we see a completely new cast of characters, I would probably be okay with it if everything else is the same. If production and writing and all that, if they're like, hey, we lost this as a character, okay, fine, we got to bring in a new character. I mean,
oh, we lost Mil Muertes, fuck it, we'll sign Abyss.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we lost Matanza. We'll replace him with Abyss.
Yeah, or you know what? Hey, King Cuerno is back. Let's do something big and fucking crazy with King Cuerno. Mm-hmm. You know? The Master and the Secret Society feels like they're intertwined. That's what Portia's saying on the couch. Is it? It could be. Could it be? What if they are intertwined and they were all playing Dario? Well, but to what end? Why would they play Dario? And so they're in cahoots with Vampiro? What? Why? Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know.
And what secret alliance is deadlier? Vampiro in charge or Mil Muertes and Katrina? Or is Katrina really a hero in disguise, just using Mil Muertes to benefit her so that she could? Because
Katrina and her sister.
Her whole idea is Katrina is immortal and she wants to die.
Yeah.
So she's trying to do all of this just so she can actually have some humanity so that she can finally die.
So she's, but why keep fucking Mil Muertes alive?
That's season four, everybody. Somehow, maybe they're looking for more sponsors because the primary backer is out or something, and the offers that they're getting, the money's not as high to continue on the same value as what they would have if they would have had the amount of money from the primary investor or something like that. And that's just on the production side. We just mouthed off a lot of talents that are doing a lot of other things right now. And I'm freaking King Ricochet is out there like talking so much smack. And especially now that his last episode's over, just wait till the shoot DVDs and the shoot interviews and everybody talking all kinds of steaming shit. Oh my God. Yeah. And now that Global Force, whatever the fuck that company wants to call itself, the one with the bird,
kind of get impact
there.
Now
they have a partnership with AAA. So is this gonna bleed in? Are we gonna get Lucha Underground characters not backing them. Yeah. So, like,
so does that mean Tejano's gone? And
yeah. So what? I don't have a goddamn clue, dude.
Yeah, I don't know.
None. Especially from the beginning from last year.
Hold on. We've talked about positive equity with Lucha Underground in the past. And most of the time when we're talking about that, we're talking about the characters and whether or not they're going to do stupid shit with their characters, right? But Lucha Underground had a way of finding people that we didn't know who the fuck they were and making them stars. Famous B, Matanza himself. Matanza was a fucking nobody. Mr. Cisco came out of nowhere. What's his name?
At the end of the day,
a lot of people.
Can you replace
Dragon Azteca?
Can you replace talents like Johnny Mundo, like King Ricochet, like Pentagon Jr., Pentagon Dark, whatever you want to call him? Can you replace talents like that? Especially when they're weaved in the storyline with so much weight of the brand. And then
I don't know.
So we're gonna start season four with a champion that is no longer how do you write out Pentagon Dark if he's no longer affiliated with the company and he's your heavyweight champion?
I gotcha.
It was all a dream.
No, you just killed Dario. And the dude with the gun said, new management will clean up all your mess.
Oh, yeah.
New management could go in there and say, hey, we're starting over. We don't recognize that stupid Aztec belt. Here's a new belt. You guys fight for this. And, oh, by the way, here's our guys. This and that and so and so. And this new guy. That's how you fucking hit the reset button. That's what NWA did with Lone Star. That's what NWA's done with a lot of other independent companies. They come in and say, oh, this so-and-so regional championship, don't worry about that. Here's the NWA North American title, the NWA Mid-South title, the NWA whatever.
Did you continue watching Impact Wrestling after AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, Eric Young left the company?
Hell fuck no.
Are you going to continue, or will you have a desire to continue watching Lucha Underground with Pentagon Dark, Johnny Mundo, Prince Puma?
I will give it a shot. This I will, because what did I just say? The positive equity that Lucha Underground has. All this fucking shit with people leaving, it's all been with the fucking drama with the wrestlers. We haven't heard anything about drama with production, writers. Fucking Robert Rodriguez isn't going anywhere. It's his fucking company and his fucking TV show. You know, his fucking channel. He ain't going nowhere. So, yeah, if all that is still there and they just pluck different wrestlers from obscurity and throw a fucking lucha mask on them and give them a different name, they might be able to fucking pull it off.
Okay.
That's what they did with Mad Dog. He was M Dog 20 or whatever. Oh, no, you're Son of Havoc. We're going to put a fucking mask on you. You know? And boom, you got a new luchador. That's your own fucking IP. Mm-hmm. I bet they could do it. Just raid some of the indies that WWE hasn't gotten their fingers on yet, and they could do it. For next thing you know, fucking Mysterious Q will be fucking Lucha Underground. you never know.
Yeah. Okay.
That's Ultima Lucha 3.
What's your match of the night?
God damn it, Chris. I don't know. If you want to go pure wrestling perspective, I'd have to say Johnny versus Puma. If we're going to go storyline perspective, we got to go with Puma versus Pentagon Dark.
Dude,
but if I'm we're taking away
torn,
my
– I'm still torn between Puma and Pentagon Dark and the front runner that I had from the very beginning.
The Hello War match. War. And if I somehow get convinced that I'm being a fucking irrational person with the actual real injuries aspect of it, then hands down it's going to be the Art of War match or Hell of War.
Well, I'm going to try to persuade you a little bit because right here on this special edition episode, I am willing to put this on our match of the year candidacy list, the Hell of War match. And if you want a match to represent Lucha Underground on this list further, because we have Mariposa versus Sexy Star, if you want something from this show to be represented on that match of the year list, your option is there, Hell of War. Because I am giving my thumbs up right now that if we could, Hell of War is on that match of the year list.
Well, then what we do in these types of situations is we normally turn it over to the people.
Uh-oh.
people, what do you say? Is the Hell of War match
worthy of our
worthy of being match of the year, being the best match out of all of Ultima Lucha Trace? And am I being irrational by putting the asterisk on it? Should I not have a problem? Are my problems that I bring up valid?
What's your pick if it's not Hell of War?
If it's not the Hell of War match, tell us what it is. Should any other match maybe be considered for match of the year? I don't know. You tell us. Am I wrong? Is Chris right?
Think it over. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.
Yeah, because I don't know. And Arnold didn't watch it. Arnold's never been that big of a fan of Lucha Underground, even though we try to get him into it. It's kind of like me with comic books.
He's still halfway through season one on Netflix.
I just don't know where to fucking start when it comes to comic books. I understand that with Arnold, damn, that's a lot to get through to just catch up. So I understand why he got discouraged.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
They're already at the 100th episode mark. In three seasons, Lucha Underground's already at 100 episodes. Yeah. So it's going to take him a while.
Porsche says that I'm irrational. Okay.
Yeah, but you live with him. You know better. That's why.
All right. So we'll see.
That's it. That's the show.
That's it. That's the show. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/HoustonWrestlingRadio, or on Twitter at HWrestlingRadio, or just leave your comment here on the YouTube in the comments right here. And we'll know. And then hopefully by Wednesday, maybe we'll have a better yes, no, because when it comes to our year in review match, it's gonna be all of us. It'll at least be me. You should also be Arnold. If I could try to wrangle Scott and Travis over here, sure, why not? And then we're all gonna watch our match of the year candidates and then pick a match of the year. So this should be something all of us agree on. I know if Arnold can't agree on it, all right, well then. Whatever.
Well, this is
the people.
This is independent to just us two and anybody that's watching. So we'll come back to this and hopefully by on Wednesday's episode, and we'll have a decision.
Yeah.
But if not, dude, right now, between Raw, SmackDown, NXT, dude,
trying to watch New Japan.
This is literally quality over quantity again.
Yes.
Even at the lows of this season have been higher or just as good as any of the highs that WWE consistently has given us.
I agree.
So, yeah, I have no problem blowing my load in the first 20, 30 minutes of our match of the year, end of the year episode, just gushing over how I wished.
A lot less time to blow your load.
Well, I've been working on it.
Oh.
You see, I pinch myself here so that my attention goes to here and I forget that this there. Is busy.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
That's why I'm covered in scars.
Oh, God. so you didn't go through a plate of glass?
No, I upgraded. I have a barbed wire mattress.
Oh, I see. All right. Go enjoy TLC or as best as you can after watching Ultima Lucha. I know it's going to be a hard act for us to follow.
Finn, AJ.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. When we did our prediction show, it was when nobody had meningitis.
Yeah.
Now, with all the fucking, but that's a different show for a different time, unfortunately.
That's Wednesday. Cover it.
Yeah.
That's the first thing we're going to talk about on Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Before we even go into the matches, because I have a lot to say
about meningitis.
All right. Yeah.
So
Listerine gets it all out.
Go enjoy some TLC, y'all. adios, my friends. Keep it classy.